CliffCentral.com.
Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, folks. Welcome to Auto Central, the motoring podcast from the brand that cares, Auto Trader South Africa, the trusted motoring marketplace. If you've tuned in live, you can engage with us. And if you, even if you download the show, you can engage with us at Auto Trader SA and our hashtag Auto Central. If you are tuning in live, then welcome to the show and thanks for listening in live. And if not and you download this later, well, then thank you for downloading. It's always nice to know that there are people who do listen to the show, which is fantastic. We've got a jam-packed show today. It was a crazy, crazy weekend this last weekend, and we've got some people in the studio today. We've got some of the usual suspects. George Mini, CEO of Auto Trader South Africa. We also know that he's a lover and a professional tech and business, enthusiast. I was thinking last night, I was like going to go say, okay, George.
What word do you want to use?
Well, I was going to say, if you were a boxer, would you be a heavyweight? Would you be a light heavyweight? Would you be a super heavyweight?
I think it depends.
Okay, depends on what it is.
In some areas I'm lightweight. Some areas I'm not. So I'd like to think that I'm constantly learning. So that's the trick. I think if anybody in this entire planet thinks that they know everything, they're in for a serious fall.
Fantastic. Yeah, well, listen, and then there is one thing that we know for certain, and there's not a weighting category here, but we know that you are an F1 junkie. That's it.
I am an F1 junkie. I took a break from it for a couple of years, but this year I'm back into it again.
And really, really exciting stuff happening, hey?
Yeah, you know, Ferrari, and I think the reason I lost interest was, it's probably bad to say, but the reason I lost interest was Ferrari was really waning. They weren't doing so well. And this year they are back with a vengeance, absolute vengeance.
Well, we'll get into some F1 stuff later when we do a bit of a recap. Then the rose amongst the thorns. Thanks for joining us on time.
You.
Hey, were you on the bark?
Yes.
And so no excuses, huh?
I know, but it is so cold out there, and I chose the wrong pants. I got holes in my pants.
Okay. Well,
ripped
jeans on a bike this morning.
Exactly. So like I said, the rose amongst the thorn at SA Bike Fest, and in the studio today, SA Speed Queen. And the always smiling Wilmarie Jansen van Rensburg.
Hoe gaan het? Very, baie goed. Daar praat ik.
Praat maar Afrikaans.
Ja, je kan. Of course you can.
Hello.
As long as you follow up with Kosa.
What?
Kosa.
I'm trying.
And I see you got a bodyguard today.
I do.
Oh, fantastic.
It's nice, eh?
Yeah, very. Fantastic. Right. And then, listen, I must say something.
Yes.
Over this weekend, and we all know it was SA Bike Fest, which we're going to touch on just now, but I must have been the only person that arrived on Saturday, on the back of a bike with a woman driver.
Who was the woman driver?
Wilmarie.
Oh.
So I ran to the gates to give her tickets, and I jumped on the back. And you could check me out. Like, hang on a sec, because that doesn't normally happen in the biking world. It's only the guy that lifts the girl. Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, we'll get there.
Especially on the bike that we were on.
Yeah. Well, this is not really a bike for lifting.
No,
is it?
It's not.
But we're going to talk about that later, hey?
Yes.
What was it?
It's a Triumph Bonneville Street Cup.
It sounds fast.
We'll get to
we'll
that.
Get to right, and then we've got a special in-studio guest, what we would now deem the newest Auto Central friend, Jaco Gerrits, and you are the CEO and founder of Crash Detect.
That's correct, John. Thanks a lot for having me.
It's only a pleasure. Welcome to the show, and get stuck in. We're going to unpack Crash Detect and what it is and how it works, and I've got 1,000 questions that I'm going to ask you just now.
Do we have the rest of the day? It's brilliant.
Fantastic. Yeah, so we are going to get onto that. But I think first, I mean, we've had a crazy last 2 weeks in the motoring industry. Something that news that's not. I mean, it's still fresh. Still kind of fresh. But General Motors obviously leaving South Africa. And I think if we can just touch on that, a little bit in terms of what impact is that going to have, on
downstream.
Yeah, downstream. And what is it going to do to people who own those kind of vehicles? And just obviously reading and having a look, there's a lot of news sources out there which you can go and, check out. But I think if we just can unpack it quickly, George, I'm going to start off with you and just say, what is your take on the whole scenario?
So, when something like this happens, people jump onto the negative bandwagon, which it's not a great thing. And General Motors leaving the country is a sad day in our history. They've done it before.
Yes.
So it's not new.
Yeah.
But, I like to look at the positive side of things. And a journalist phoned me the other day and asked me, you know, what my opinion is on this story, and try to go down the negative road, which, you know, there are negatives to this scenario.
Naturally, yes.
But let's look at the positives. The first thing is that consumer demand for cars in South Africa is not going to go away. I kept saying it. It's not going to go away. It's not like we have this awesome public transport system that suddenly someone's going to sell their Opel and go and use a bus.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So in saying that, the consumer demand is just going to shift from those cars to other cars, if that's the case. Then I think General Motors has been quite smart about this. They've exited the country, and Isuzu is going to become a brand on its own,
a standalone brand under
Isuzu Motors South Africa. They're going to open up, I think it was 90 dealerships.
Yeah.
And,
90
dealerships. And that's going to be a good thing for the country because, you know, Isuzu is a strong brand, and Africa needs needs infrastructure growth. So does South Africa to a certain degree.
Yes.
But Isuzu is going to benefit from that.
Well, they've landed up buying the Studendale plant from General Motors. Am I right? And they're going to manufacture locally.
Yes,
which is great.
Which is brilliant. So we can only see. I suspect that the Isuzu brand is just going to get stronger. You know, given that standalone status,
yes,
and not being watered down by
being part of a bigger
General Motors kind of thing.
Holding, yeah. Well, I think so too. I mean, my gut tells me that that's cool. I mean, you know, when we're reading and stuff, that's phenomenal for Isuzu.
It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. So,
you know, the second brand that's hit by this is Opel.
Yeah.
And as we know, again, General Motors has been smart about this. They sold Opel to PSA Group in France.
Mm-hmm.
And
George, that's Peugeot, and the PSA owns Peugeot and Citroën.
Okay. Yes, Peugeot and Citroën.
Yeah.
And now we know that there are Peugeots and Citroëns in the country. They're imported cars.
Mm-hmm.
So the only change there is that the cars will become imported cars.
Yeah.
Now, it remains to be seen what happens to Opel, but if the brand is smart, if PSA is smart, then again, I think it'll be in a similar camp to Isuzu, where Opel won't be negatively affected.
Yeah. And they'll give it the limelight and the respect that the brand deserves.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a brand that's been in this country
for a long time.
For a long time.
And it won SA Car of the year.
Well, exactly. The Astra won Car of the Year last year.
How does it affect the current owners?
So General Motors has committed to supporting cars for 10 years. Maintenance plans,
warranties
for 10 years, which I think is another smart move by General Motors, because, you know, if they stick to their word on that, mm-hmm. then I don't see there being too much of an issue moving forward, because they've committed to supporting the cars. I think the brand that's hit them heaviest is obviously Chevy. Because Chevy is now pulling out of the country under General Motors, and there's no plans to continue manufacturing them or anything of that nature. So I think and I don't think we should be naive to think that prices are not going to be affected.
I think prices naturally would be affected by this, but I think, you know, over time it will stable out and this will become old news, and everyone will just carry on and move forward like we do as South Africans.
Exactly.
Naturally, that's
exactly
our natural progression and how we deal with things in this country.
Well, what was the main reason for deciding that? I mean, did they say anything?
You know, inside what companies like this make public versus what goes on inside, you know, there is a lot of truth to what they say, and I don't know what the inside scenario is, but it's part of their global strategic move. They want to concentrate on other countries in the world, in Europe and in China, and obviously this is not a growth continent.
Focus on markets that are actually going to drive profit for them, and not just, you know, break even or even, you know, take a knock. I mean, what's the point? If you really think about it like that, if it's, you know, if you're not selling enough.
So they don't want to compete here. They'd rather go somewhere the numbers are.
Well, just think about it. If you're running a business, you're running a business to make a profit. That's the bottom line. That's 100%. Why people get into business. And if you're running a business and you're just, you know, coming out at the end and it's hurting your back pocket, it's like flogging a dead horse.
Yeah.
You're not going to continue to do it. So, you know, I see a lot of people have jumped on the, it's because, you know, South Africa's in crap and with junk status, and it's not that. It's not that, because they've pulled out of India, they've pulled out of other countries where they're just not making money.
Exactly.
So, You know,
I don't think it's a South Africa thing.
No,
I think
it's
just
not.
A global strategy by General Motors, and they want to take their business in a particular direction, and that's fair enough.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So that's
makes sense.
That's the story there. Right, now that we've done, you know, sorted that little problem out in this country and all the problems have gone away, I think the next thing that we want to chat about is, we spent a lot of time together this weekend. I've even got Fazani here, who was at Kailami with us doing all of our social media. Well, let me tell you now, the entire team was busy this weekend. And just to those that were in support of us back at, you know, at the office over the weekend, thank you very much, ladies. We really appreciate all the support that
look,
you give
I can
us, the
tell
social
you,
team.
I mean, George, I can tell you, they were seeing Auto Trader left, right, top, bottom, everywhere.
No, we were all over that show. But I just think, you know, hands down to Clarion Events for once again putting on a fantastic, fantastic show. To the OEMs and the brands that supported the event, you know, hats off to them. I think to Kailami, a massive shout out. What a great venue.
It
is well run. There are toilets everywhere. The access is
stunning
easy to get
toilets.
To. It's clean. Yes. It is maintained. It's just such a great venue. I was there Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and you know what? If the show was there today, I would have gone back again because it really, really was a great show. It really, really was.
Whatever you
show.
Couldn't see today or get to tomorrow, you get to them. It was. And I mean, they changed it up a bit. I don't know if you noticed to last year.
Yes.
Yeah.
In terms of where, who they placed where.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, they had a reason for that, and I think it worked. And it was nice for Auto Trader too, because I mean, you park and you see Auto Trader.
I loved it.
Yeah, well, we had our nearly new kind of bike stand there. So we gave an opportunity to some dealers to, you know, kind of, you know, Auto Trader, we play in the digital space, so you can't touch and feel. Whereas you come to a bike fest like this, you can actually touch and feel the bikes that are on our site, which was really, really nice and a first. And I think, you know,
I mean, I went there yesterday, and you know, those dealership stands inside our stand was full.
Yes.
All the time.
Yeah.
You know, people were looking at used bikes for sale.
Exactly. Well, you know, the biking public came out in full support. I mean, geez, like, let's be honest. I saw some proper characters this weekend. But I think that's
something
what
for everyone.
Everybody. But that's exactly what makes, you know, the and it's hard because you don't want to label everyone a biker because not everybody is a biker. I mean, I ride a scooter. It doesn't make me a biker. There were bikers. There were families. There were motorcyclists. There were people who just enjoy riding.
So what's the definition of a biker?
No, I want to hear this as well.
But now you're putting me on the spot.
Okay, well, I think let's not put Vilmarie on the spot. My definition of a biker is the oak who is... Jeez, like, okay. You know, I can't really judge him on height or size, but he had a denim...
He's got the full garb.
A denim cut-off waistcoat
with
45 million badges and patches. Some of the Oaks had 1%er. Now, if you understand what in the biking community, what that stands for, that's just like, don't look for cuck with that Oak, because he'll just give you a tati. You know, guys with... bags, you know, you can't. It's not like having a car where you can put all your stuff in your boot and stuff. So,
Oaks,
like moon bags and strap-on packs on the legs. But you know what?
Fanny pack.
It was absolutely amazing. In America, they call it a fanny pack. They do, because in America, that's a bum. Well,
no, there was, and then they walk with a beer, and you know they're going to get on the bike now.
No, well, I know this is crazy. I mean, we had an Oak on our stand on Saturday night.
I don't think there's 1%. I don't think beer touches sides with those.
No. Geez, like, and I think he'd been drinking all day because he came up to the stand. He's like, I want to sell my bike. I'm like, we'll get hold of you next week.
I'm worried. He's actually describing some of my friends.
So, yeah, I think in general, just a fantastic, fantastic show. And, I mean, I did say to you guys, come, you know, I want to know what your good, bad, and your ugly was. And then I think we can just rattle on a little bit about some of the bikes that were there and some of the things that we saw. And I just... What I really enjoyed about the show was that there was something to do on the hour every hour. Yeah. There was always something happening. Always.
Mm. They had a very good itinerary, if you want to call it that. Even from the media point of view, the Friday, I mean, they had a good layout for us. And they planned it good this year because, so let's say KTM had something nice they wanted to reveal. So they say to you time slot 10. All the media guys are there. 10:30 is Husqvarna, for example. And they've got something nice to reveal. And then they carry on and on and on to the next ones. Here and there, some of the manufacturers missed the mark by miles, but then they didn't get the media. So they really planned it well. So we got to see some nice stuff revealed the right time and then get it out there to the public, and post it and get the guys interested. So, and I mean, for the rest of it, I didn't go in the evenings. I know you went the one evening. I don't know if you went, George.
No.
But apparently it was also great. I saw some of the social media.
Yeah, well, they had the Monster Energy, you know. What could you say when you're speaking to those acts? Those acts were just sick. They really, really were. I mean, you know,
those were the international guys.
Well, they did. They had a whole bunch of, you know, the top FMX riders out here doing backflips and, you know, handstands and Supermans and can-cans and all those things that they do on bikes, you know.
Fire flames going.
The pyrotechnics. It was really, really good. And I'm just, again, like run like a well-oiled machine. So to Vuk and his team from Monster Energy, just, you know, they really were great. And the fact that our stand was next to them, they played great music all weekend. They were giving away free Monster Energy drinks, which I think kept the crowd, you know, sugared up and caffeined up. So
and I had a, I saw a tattoo. Did it belong to Monster? There was a tattoo studio.
I came this close.
I thought you said you were getting
well
one.
When I saw the design, I went home on Saturday night and I was like, okay, cool, I'm doing this. But then I checked out the one tattoo artist versus the other one, and the one that I was gonna let tattoo me, I preferred the other guy's work. So I just went back and I just said, listen,
I'm ready,
it's done, it's gonna happen, but I just wanted the right person to do it.
Did you say that to him?
Well, I was going, listen, if I'm gonna put ink on my body for the rest of my life, I'm gonna be blatantly honest. I'm like, I love your work, it's really good, and I'm not knocking what you do. But I would just prefer him to do my tattoo because of the way he, you know.
It's a personal thing.
It is
it's
a
like
personal
a
thing. Listen, tattoo artists are all different. Huh? Some folks, you know, do, you know, their styles are different.
Yeah.
You know, it's like every painter. You can't say that
so
every painter is the same.
So what was the
tattoo going to
be?
No, I can't tell you.
Come on.
I'll show
and
you.
Where was
I'll
it
show
be?
You. No, just on my arm. Okay. But I'll show you. I'll show you when it's done.
Have,
it's
you, got, have you got any, Ty?
I've got one.
You got one?
Yeah, but we can't talk about it on air. Yeah. So, anyway.
Don't worry, I've also got one.
Okay, we're allowed to talk about that on air.
No.
No, okay. Yaki, have you got any tattoos?
None.
Really?
But and you're a biker.
I'm not a biker. We've established that.
Oh, my word. So, listen, what was your highlights of the show?
Honestly, I think everyone knows by now, but my highlight was the new Husqvarna, the first road version in 40 years. I looked for something else, but I just could not find anything that was as exciting as that. It's the first serious road
street bike.
I mean, it's a 400cc, but when you look at it, you don't even notice the size. You just look at this thing that looks like it's from space age. And what's also exciting is the scrambler version coming now in, what did they say, January, February.
Of that.
So yes.
Same styling, but it's going to be a scrambler.
A little different, a deeper seat, more upright handlebar, black. Like a matte black almost sub. And I mean, nice. I honestly can tell you, I'm sure this bike's going to be in movie soon because it just looks the part.
Well, it's got like modern styling,
yes.
But it's got an older appeal. So it's kind of, I don't know if I'd be describing it correctly, but like kind of almost like a cafe racer kind of.
It's got a retro
space age
type,
that's the word.
But modern. It's very different. And it's got the round face in the front, but
all
LEDs.
That light is amazing.
Yes.
Jeez, like.
They've got nice pipes. Everything about it is just fantastic. I don't know all the specs because it was just revealed as well. We will be getting, and they promised me, a demo in January.
Well, I spoke to Frank as well, and I've said, listen, I want to have a bash on that. So.
And they will. I mean, they're great. Did you know that they're part of KTM?
No.
Yeah.
Also, and the oldest bike brand in South Africa,
yeah.
Really?
From what I understood. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a story that I want to unpack.
Or something like that. Well, not only in South Africa, I think in general.
Yeah, one of the oldest biking
one
brands.
One of the oldest manufacturers since 903. They are backed by KTM. They're part of the group.
Well, I see they're from Austria.
Yes.
Austria and Sweden.
Yes.
Which, if they make Swiss Army knives the way they do and Swiss watches, imagine what this bike's going to be like.
This is the thing. This one has got, it's basically the Swiss origin, you know, I think that's what makes it so different, too. I'm excited to see the black one, the scrambler version, call it that. They don't want to call it that.
This looks like a bike that should be in Mad Max movie.
Exactly.
It's
an awesome
look, yeah.
Definitely not for a biker with a fanny pack, if you ask me.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
Move it to the back.
Yeah. And then your...
Negative.
Yeah.
No place for number two.
I can't really... You know what? The BM situation.
Yes.
I think that was it. I don't know if we're allowed to talk, but apparently we are.
I don't see why not.
I mean, head office pulling out on such short notice for me is very disappointing.
Yeah.
The stand is nowhere near BMW's quality.
But hats off to the dealership for Samsung,
for making it look
as nice as it did.
But
I mean, obviously lastminute.com. Yes.
Because Santon got it.
Yeah.
And Auto Bavaria, a Centurion. I mean, they kind of in between. I think they should have shared or something or given both an opportunity. So basically, I don't know if you know what happened, George. I mean, BMW head office pulled out literally, I think, the night before. And I mean, they've got a good quality of display and stuff that
they've got nice bikes.
Yeah. And they do it properly. So they just decided last minute, oh no, they're not going to do it. And the reason is, I know the new GM, we met him at the GS launch. And he's still very new to bike. Well, he's been here, I think, two or three years. But he's very new still to biking, actually riding. He was riding with us. But, you know, he rides well, but you can see it's a lot of it's still quite new.
Like me.
You know, he can help himself, but he even said himself he needs to now start going for quite a bit of training. But obviously it was a decision on his, like GM is doing, it was a strategic decision they took, and they just decided, no, they're out, and they're only giving it to Santon. So they had a lot of accessories, and the bikes were, although they allowed you in, you know, the way they placed it, it was, for me, it was disappointing. It was the
I remember BMW stand last year. And it was impressive. This year, I walked past, I didn't notice where it was. I did the second round. I noticed where it was. It was in the corner there. Yes. They were doing coffee on the outside. So I think they did a good job. But you know, you got to juxtapose that against, you know, it was a last minute job. So they did a good job based on.
Yeah, I think, and you know, if you went in 2016 and you went this year and you compared what BMW delivered last year to what they delivered this year. Not the same.
I just don't think, from an ethical point of view, I don't think that's right.
Yeah.
Not the day before a show starts.
There's obviously, you know, bigger reasons and things that happen that we're not aware of. Yeah. But anyway, I suppose these things. But the likes of KTM, the KTM stand was absolutely fantastic. The Husqvarna stand was
KTM stand was beautiful. Much, much better than last year.
Yeah.
You know, the bikes on display, there was nice space between the bikes. It was really good.
Did you see the limited edition race replica bike standing there?
On KTM?
On the
Is that
KTM
the one that
stand?
Like Brad Binder would have ridden?
Yes. So apparently they're going to sell a few in South Africa. I think 6 or 7.
Jeez, Lord.
If I'm not mistaken. And it is a limited edition.
Yeah.
Which is quite, I mean, that's unique to them as well. So that was quite a crowd puller.
Very, very nice. I know this that Yamaha had a couple of nice bikes and other things on their stand that were also crowd pullers.
You're talking ladies.
I
can't
did.
Call them things.
No, well, listen, you said ladies. I would have said angels. But anyway.
But they were everywhere. Chad and I walking, filming live, by the way, on Facebook.
Yeah.
And as we're going, you just see the camera and we're busy talking. Oh, and then he turns it around. There's a few girls. Turns it this way. There's a few girls. Turns it that way. Oh, there's a few girls.
Yeah.
And we're still talking. It's just distraction. Yeah. Instant.
So there were a couple of other bikes that were really, really nice. I think my bike of the show, and I actually can't just, you know, pin one down.
I can.
Yeah.
Can you? Okay, go. What is it?
Ducati 1299.
Oh, how did I know?
Really?
I love that bike.
Look of it.
Yeah, the look of it.
They had one in white as well, am I right? Was it also a 1299?
No, you can't
super
do Ducati
sport.
In
that
white.
That was a super sport.
That was also very, very
the
nice.
The 1299 in red, it's got to be red, yes.
Yeah, it's got to be red.
But I don't actually know the specs yet, and we haven't tested it yet, so I'll let you know.
Let us know when you do.
That is a proper Ferrari in a bike.
Was there nothing else in there by the Ducati stand? Because they were quite on their own.
Yeah. You know, the 1299 was standing outside. You know, it was by itself. It almost looked like somebody had parked it there. It wasn't part of the show, but still a beautiful bike.
Did you go inside?
They had one inside
there
as well.
That you
what
saw?
Inside? Oh, yeah. That Ducati Scrambler.
I know which one is yours. Now I know.
The black Scrambler.
Yes,
it was in
the Cafe
back
Racer.
Oh my gosh, what a beautiful
Was that
machine.
Your bike?
Well, no, it's not. Because I also like the 9T from BMW as well.
Oh,
so
the Scrambler 9T.
Yeah. I just can't put my finger on it, eh? So, you know, maybe one day I'll have one of
each. But, you know,
there's
so many good... There's no more bad bikes.
It's like cars.
It's a personal choice.
Yeah, it's just
100%.
A personal choice. I mean, my favorite bike on the planet is the Yamaha R1. I don't think anybody ever changed my mind.
Okay.
Two R1 fans, yeah.
Yeah, the Yamaha R1 is my favorite bike. Second to that, Ferrari-type bike, Ducati 1299. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, there was just so much happening. I mean, the charity ride yesterday morning was amazing.
How did that go?
Well, I mean, all I saw was would look like hundreds and hundreds of bikes.
But that's great.
And they arrived and then they stopped and they all, you know, revved their engines a little bit. So the sound coming out of that, you know, the main straight on the track was absolutely spectacular.
So they were supporting raising funds for cats and dogs, looking after the animals.
Is that called the Tin Run? Was that part of the Tin Run? The charity, the Tin Run?
Yes. Yes.
That's right.
For the animals.
For the animals. So they collect food and then they distribute that. And
then all money.
Yeah. I think another massive highlight for me and the first time at the show this year was the, and I think it is a DOD, DOD, the Super GP Champions Trophy.
Oh, the racing.
Yeah, geez.
Did you enjoy that? I was going to ask you, what did you think?
That for me was absolutely spectacular. Yeah. Not too much of a race for old, well, not old, but Clinton Seller, who won the race. But there was an awesome battle for second and third, and then fourth, fifth, and sixth.
So you actually think it's good to include that in the event?
Absolutely. I can tell you now, the grandstands filled up. Mm. People came to watch the racing, and it was.
Racing is always a crowd puller.
Yeah.
It's nice to hear from you guys because we find it so boring. But if it was good for you.
For the crowd it is.
Yeah, I suppose because we used to obviously having more than one class and it was the race itself.
Yeah.
There wasn't. It's nice when you have three, four guys bunching up, you know, racing. So you have more than one race in a race.
I think for the public, they don't get all that technicality. Mm. So, the more the race is just a flipping loud people going around the track racing each other, that's all they want. You know, they're not really too into the technical side. I think that audience is more niche.
The only thing I mean Kyalami is fantastic in every way, but why the grandstand there is on the main straight, I don't get. Because isn't that boring? Okay, you guys enjoyed it, but you want to see corners.
You know what? I think that's one thing about Kyalami is if you venture away from the pit building, there are viewpoints. I mean, where we sat, we could see the guys going up the mine shaft, coming down the mine shaft, and then all the way around. There's a couple of S bends. I mean, I don't know what the.
Could you see it from where you were?
Completely. That's what we watched. You know, so you could actually see, you know, quite a bit of.
That's the other thing. Were you standing by where all the classic bikes were and the two strokes?
No, I was sitting on a grandstand. I went and sat on one of the grandstands.
You see, I haven't been around now since they've rebuilt the
whole. It was fantastic. It really, really was good. So, you know, hats off to
Toby.
Philip. Stephen Watson from Gas Sports, because I think they put on a great race.
Yes. Yeah. And also the MC work, I think, was very good, I must say, throughout the show. I don't know if you noticed. Did you ever meet the guys?
We met the guys. Lovely oaks. Really, really nice. I think that would be one of my negatives, is you can only hear if you're sitting on the main straight, where we were situated. Mm. You couldn't really hear what they were going on about.
Did you notice all the classic bikes?
Yes, of course.
And the two strokes? I mean, that's amazing to see those bikes. I mean, we're going back so many years and they are spotless. That's nice. You know, it brings back memories.
Yeah, and then also those custom bikes for the Rocker Mamas custom bike build-off were spectacular. I mean, the paintwork in there is just...
But you know what I noticed? No one is talking about, I'm going to say this, Dave Peterson's 500cc ride.
Did he do it?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. No,
I didn't hear it or see
it. Did you? I heard of 500cc. Yeah, it's supposed to be the thing. I mean, he's a legend in the racing.
I didn't know.
Exactly.
I didn't know.
So, I mean, that was a highlight. I don't even recall hearing the bike or seeing him go around. So, sorry, Dave.
Probably not enough media around attention or planning around it. That's why.
But I think overall the manufacturers did really good. Honda, you know what was really nice for me to see? Suzuki. They've been off the, call it, main streamline, whatever you want to call it, off the grid for a very long time. They haven't had anything exciting or good enough.
Yeah, they probably hung their hat on the GSX-R 750 for too long.
Well, now that their new 1000 is out, Yvonne, the lady from Suzuki, said to me that they flew the bikes in just for the show.
Ah.
They literally got them there 2 days before. They panicked. They had three bikes and one on the stand, three as demos, and all three bikes booked out the whole weekend.
That's brilliant.
To test.
No, I mean, people love that. I think that Suzuki's bike brand, this is just my personal layman's opinion, that Suzuki bike brand was built around the S-Rad. And that's what made them.
The
S-Rad was a great buy. The S-Rad was the thing that put them on the planet. And you know, they need to come up with something new.
Yeah.
Something fresh. Something that can give.
Well, you know, the 1,000 now is the fastest one.
Well, you know, you've got to give it some time to get into the market. And then it could become another phenomenon like the S-Rad.
Well, the good thing is they're saying it's not only fast, it handles well. I haven't tested it, so I'm sure the guys will start. Mm. I mean, they're starting to race now, so we'll see.
They're going to find something to beat the
R1.
Yeah. Well, there we go. And on that note, so listen, we're gonna go to a quick break, and when we come back, because Yaka's about to fall asleep here.
I was just sitting
here listening, still trying to.
His coffee's finished.
Pictures of those the big mean barkers that we saw over the weekend. So yeah, a little bit
the
of
the girls you were talking about, man.
And yeah, we'll be back on air in a jiffy. Right, we're back, and a little bit of Lumineers there in the background, and everybody's up to speed. Right, Yako, thank you very much for joining us and sitting through the first half of the show. But you are the founder and CEO of Crash Detect, and I think in simple terms for the listeners, this is a cell phone application that has been developed to reduce the emergency response time for emergency services to get to a crash scene. Am I right?
Correct, yeah.
Now, I don't want it to make it about, it's not going to be a doom and gloom segment about number of crashes and, you know, road fatalities and stuff like that. But I know that South Africans in general are 100% affected by what happens, you know, on our roads. And
well,
you know,
I mean, I don't think it's about the level of crashes that happen in the country. It's just our ability to respond, and that's what Yaku is trying to solve.
100%.
You know,
100%.
In other countries, you've got emergency services that respond a lot quicker.
Yes.
Whereas in our country, we've got big countries, lots of space. You know, can the emergency services respond in the way that they should, in the time that they should, because of that golden hour?
Yeah. And do we have the quantity of vehicles to respond to the number of accidents and stuff like that? So I think the first question is let's just take a couple of steps back. How did it come about? What was the birthing place of Crash Detect? What made you think of this idea and actually go, you know what, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to, you know, apply my life to.
Yeah, so just a little bit of background. I own a holding company called Dynamis Technologies. So I've been in the tech industry for the last 15 years. And what we do as a company is we look for new market opportunities, specifically related to tech. And what I also like doing is reading a lot. So one night I was reading about some of the sensors in your smartphone, one of which is called the accelerometer. So typically what the accelerometer is used for, it's for screen orientation. So if you tilt your device, let's say, in a landscape mode, obviously the screen orientation will change as well. And the one other thing that you can do with the accelerometer is also pick up G-forces. So basically force that's applied on the phone. And that got me thinking in terms of obviously forces that are involved if you are involved in a serious car crash. So I started looking at the technical application and thought, is the engineering around this feasible at all? We felt that we had the competency in order to develop a solution. Now, bear in mind that we had to eliminate false positives, for example, dropping a phone.
Yes.
I actually had one client that said one day, okay, but what happens if I'm mad at my wife and I throw her with the phone?
Emergency service should be dispatched.
Maybe they should be, yeah. So that's the kind of technical challenges we had to overcome. But, yeah, it's taken us about 2 years with the R&D solution to come up with something that we're obviously very comfortable with. And I think over and above that, once we started investigating the challenges, we really found out how big the problem was. Not only in South Africa, it's actually a global challenge.
Problem, yeah.
So just to shed some light on the global problem, there's actually an international campaign running at the moment called the Decade of Action for Road Safety, which was started by the United Nations. So it's running from the period 2011 to 2020. Now, why? It's actually a massive social and economic challenge. Just to give you some of the stats, and I know we didn't want to chat about the stats, but 1.3 million fatalities worldwide every year, 50 million injuries, and it's costing developing countries up to $100 billion every year. So obviously there's a massive social and economic impact. And the United Nations identified 5 key pillars, one of which is called post-crash response. So how effectively you respond to emergencies is really key. And we felt that our solution could fit in nicely within that space.
Sure. Geez, like, I mean, that's really, really, you know, there's some...
Solving a proper problem.
Proper problem. And the uptake of the app to date, I mean, is it something that we can go and download? And how does it actually work, like, from a consumer's point of view?
Yeah, so we've got two sides. We've got the consumer side, and then we've got the business side. So just on the consumer side, you can go onto our website and then subscribe for one of the subscriptions. At the moment, we've got 7 unique subscriptions. So 3 of the subscriptions are what we call non-regulated, or it doesn't include an insurance component.
Okay.
But just to tell you about some of the value-added benefits that we've bundled in there. So we went to the market and we said, okay, over and above Crash Alert, which is our primary feature, what else would you like to see in this app? And what we've built is a lot of other value adds. And just to run through them quickly, we've got Crash Alert, which is the primary benefit. We've got a medical emergency button. Then we've got medical emergency assist, which basically gives you access to the largest independent national network of EMS providers. So we've got 5,000 paramedics ready to respond to your call at any time, and more than 113 private EMS companies. So it's the biggest network in South Africa.
And is this nationally? So
nationally.
All of the main cities?
Absolutely. So all of the big guys, I mean the ones that are familiar, Netcare 911, ER24, Emergimed, and then 110 others. So effectively what happens is our partners have proprietary technology that's able to pinpoint the nearest ambulance. So if we've got a crash alert, or let's say the medical emergency button is pressed, we're able to pinpoint who the nearest paramedic basically is to that scene.
Okay.
Do you automatically then dispatch, or is there a check process?
There's a workflow that we've adopted. So first we are warned or notified about the specific event. So let's say it's a crash alert. We get all of your personal medical details and then also the area where the crash took place. And what we'll do is we've got medical agents that will phone you. If they are unable to get hold of you, then they'll dispatch the nearest ambulance.
Okay. And just typically, Yaku, sorry, the time period that this happens in. So from the crash, how long does that take before the medical person phones you?
So that phone call, so we've got an SLA in place with our emergency call center, so 98% of the calls will be answered within 20 seconds.
Wow.
Sure, that's really, really good.
So, I mean, that's really obviously very important to us to respond as quickly and effectively as possible.
And obviously, if that phone call's made and there is no answer, then it's...
Then dispatched. How long before somebody's dispatched?
Immediately.
Yeah,
so we pinpoint the nearest ambulance, dispatch immediately, also provide them with some situational awareness to say that the customer was traveling at this speed, this is the force that we picked up during the accident, and obviously the exact location as well.
Jeez, like that. I mean, that's absolutely spectacular. You know, and it rings home for me. I lost my mother in a car accident 13 years ago, and I kind of sat looking at your product, going, imagine if
it was there.
It was there. Because 13 years ago, you know, you see the accident, you drive past it, and, you know, somebody picks up a phone, tries to phone the cops, or, you know.
I think the funny thing is that most people are like, no, it will never happen to me. It will only happen to my neighbor. But I think people tend to forget that they're also someone's neighbor. So reality is it's a solution that's there to help you in the time that you need it most. And I think just to summarize the other benefits that included in the subscription, we've got road cover as well, where we manage your claim against a road accident fund free of charge. And then we've got roadside security. So let's say you've got a breakdown or you've had an accident and you feel unsafe next to the side of the road, we'll dispatch our armed security guard anywhere in South Africa within 30 minutes. And then we've got lawyer SOS. So if you end up in a police station and you need legal assistance, we'll dispatch a criminal lawyer in person to represent you and also to apply for bail. So what we've done is we've tried and combined a lot of value adds that looks after the emergency, legal and security needs of South African members whilst on the road. So that's where we started with our subscriptions, and then we said, okay, the next problem is that only 20% of the market has access to medical aid.
That's what I was going
to
ask now.
So now we've got this challenge where, yes, we respond very effectively to an emergency situation, but then our members have to go to a state hospital. And obviously there's complications. I think all of us as South Africans are aware of some of the challenges we have in the state hospitals. So we built an accidental cover product. So we've got 4 different products in that space, and now we give you guaranteed private hospital admission. We give you up to 100,000 hospital cover. We give you death and disability cover and R1,000 daily in-hospital benefit as well. So what we try to do is basically look at all of the different pain points that customers could potentially have, bundle it into one, and offer it at a very competitive price. So just on the insurance side, we start off at R99 a month to give you an idea of the value that we bundled into the package.
That's your core package, huh?
That's the core package. If you want to buy for a family of five, it will be $199 a month.
Yeah. I mean, I was obviously sitting having a look at the you know, your kind of what you'd call a rate card and what you actually get. And I actually can't believe the prices that
you are
charging.
Making money.
Like, you know, I think you're obviously trying to get this product, you know, out there, you know, to the mass market. Because I think it's a need. Everybody, you need medical aid. You have to have it.
Well, so especially in a situation like that.
Exactly. With this. Could you have your product instead of a traditional medical aid, or do they bolt together, or how would?
I think our product is very much focused around the accidental scenario, but also your biggest risk of ending up in hospital is actually in a car crash.
Correct.
So stats show us that. So it's definitely a great product to have if you can't afford medical aid.
Mm.
And yeah, I think just coming back to what we want to do as a business, I mean, we really want to use business as a force for good. So all of the ventures that I've had in the past always had a social or economic impact angle attached to it. And we were also lucky enough to be awarded the top social venture in South Africa last year, where we had an opportunity to represent our country in New York. So it was wonderful to get that accolade as well, and just to say that we are actually true to ourselves and the mission of the company as well, where we want to have that positive social impact.
Yeah, I think you guys have done a fantastic job. I mean, you've obviously had quite a bit of coverage. I see CNN even called your app, you know, the app that could save your life, you know, and it's been covered on CNN, on SABC, E-News, obviously a lot of platforms. So I think just kudos to you in terms of, you know,
seeing a need.
Yeah, seeing a need and creating a product that can
solve
really,
that
really
problem.
And it could actually save your life.
Yeah.
You know, so for, you know, a family of four for R200, it's a no-brainer if you ask me.
Go and download Crash Detect.
Yeah, I think so. Just give us your details. How can we get hold of you? What is just your website address, and I'll let you say it so that.
Yeah, so I think for anybody that wants to learn more about the product, please go and visit crashdetect.com.
Okay.
So all of the information is available on the website.
And how do you spell that?
C-R-A-S-H-D-E-T-E-C-H.
Yeah, Crash Detect. Yeah.
But you can actually visit Crash Detect with the T at the end as well, and we'll just redirect to the standard side. And I think just one other element, so there's two sides to the business. We touched on the consumer side, but we also have the business side. And what's quite exciting for us is that we've recently done a licensing deal with one of the largest insurers in South Africa, which will see the benefit being rolled out to 500,000 people locally. And there's also strong international interest. And the great thing is we're in discussions with the entity in Australia to also license 500,000 people, see a million members on the platform. And then also in discussions in LATAM, in Europe, and then in multiple territories in Africa as well. So we're very excited with where we are, and we're also quite excited about the next phase for the company. I think there's unique opportunities in the on-demand insurance space, where we can have niche insurance products that maybe leverage off blockchain, and that also allows us to do peer-to-peer insurance, where you can actually enter an insurance group with your mates, which will effectively reduce premiums. So I think the next phase for us as a company is definitely going to be very exciting as well.
So that's nice. I mean, it sounds like you guys sit down and you're trying to innovate and create, you know, new kind of different routes to market and different channels.
The nicest thing about this
is
he's South African.
I know. Well, it's just, you know, more South Africans doing great work.
Yeah.
I think just to step away from the product and just some personal stuff quickly before we wrap up with you. I know that a lot of people think that if you build an app, you know, the people will come. And that's a myth that has quickly been disproved.
It's actually very funny. So no, that doesn't exist. Maybe unless you're Steve Jobs. But no, it doesn't work in the entrepreneurial world.
And he took 15 years.
And he still took 15 years. So what we always say is you need to go and test your assumptions against your prospective market and see if there's really a good product market fit. So I think on our side, what we did is prior to actually even developing the solution, we did screenshots of the app. So there was not one line of code written, and we took it to dealerships, and we said to motor dealerships, can you bundle this into the finance package and sell, let's say, a 2 or 3 year term benefit? Mm. And we can heavily incentivize you on the commission structure to basically beat some of the regulated products or insurance products that you're selling. And we basically tested our assumptions on one of the distribution channels to see if this is going to be worth our while. And we can actually recover the CapEx requirement, because it's expensive to develop something
like this.
Over and above that, we also used Facebook and Google marketing, driving people to a landing page to see the interest. And we basically determined determined our acquisition cost for a customer prior to writing one line of code.
Okay.
Which then told us, okay, if we're going to invest X into marketing and we're going to invest Y into CapEx, this is basically going to be the payback period.
Yeah.
And now on paper, we can do a financial forecast and it also makes a lot of sense. So no, don't just build it. Go and test your assumptions.
Test it first. Something else, and I think I'm going to ask this question to yourself and to George. How important is it as you know, innovators and entrepreneurs and, you know, the business people that you guys are to have mentors?
I think it's vital. You know, I've had a few over my career. I think one of the biggest mistakes that leaders make is thinking that they can do it alone.
Yeah.
You can't. You're not the smartest person on the planet and you don't know everything. And so I think there's two tricks now that, you know, I'm 20 years down that road. Mm. And the first trick is have somebody that's smarter than you that doesn't work for you and doesn't work with you.
Okay.
Have someone that's smarter than you.
Yeah.
Somebody that's been down that road, and particularly probably somebody that's older than you that has got the experience as a mentor. The second trick is hire people that are smarter than you. Never hire someone that doesn't challenge you.
Okay, I see. Well,
that's interesting.
I can't agree more. So I think also my most important role in the organization is to do exactly that, to align myself with people that are smarter than me and that can do the job a lot better than me. And I always say that I need to manage by exception. So if they're not doing what they are supposed to be doing, only then do I have to intervene. Beauty is if you've got the right people, you hardly ever have to intervene.
Yeah.
And when it comes to a mentor, I agree. I mean, it's taken me 15 years to get to where I am today. So GrassyTech is the latest venture, but there's been many before. And I think there's a lot of years that would have been shaved off
exactly.
If I was not that stubborn and if I actually opened my ears and listened to somebody that has actually walked the road before me.
Yeah.
So I think having a mentor is absolutely vital.
Fantastic. Well, Jaco, you know, thanks so much for joining us in studio. I personally would like to, you know, just congratulate you again. I think you guys are doing a fantastic job. I think it's a phenomenal product. I think thanks. The price is right. I think it's something that is affordable for the general consumer out there. Mm. And you know what? Most of us have got phones. I'm assuming it works on Android and iOS. You can get it on the App Store, Crash Detect, and you know, put it on your phone, and who knows, your phone might actually save your life.
Viva South African technology.
100%. So yeah, thanks very much. We really do appreciate you, but don't go away, please stay a little bit. Are you an F1 fan?
You know what, my dad and I used to watch F1 for all the years when I was growing up, and then I don't know, it's kind of, I don't know, something went missing.
Yeah,
sound.
In between. Yeah, and
right.
Yeah, at that point, I stopped watching F1, and it was interesting when George said earlier he started again this year. I actually saw a couple of photos on social media yesterday. I'm like, maybe it's not a bad time to get back into it.
Yeah, well, I got back yesterday afternoon, and there was a safety car out. And you know, the Monaco Grand Prix for me is kind of like, you know, look, I'm no funny when it comes to how to race a vehicle, but there's really not a lot of opportunity to overtake. It's a very, very tight course. I mean, hats off to those drivers. But I want to ask you, George, because at the end, I obviously saw some of the tweets that you put out as well, and there was something that happened.
So there's this, you know, over the years, I know exactly what you're talking about because that's what my tweets were about.
Yeah, is there a favorite child? Yeah.
Is there a favorite child? So you've got to understand the backstory. Over the years, the Formula One teams have had to use strategies, especially in a race like Monaco, because Monaco is, you can't overtake.
No.
It's just almost impossible to overtake. You saw the number of crashes yesterday. If you try and overtake, you're going to be in the barrier. And there's no sand pits, there's no runoff areas or anything of that nature. So you can't overtake. So you've got to use strategy. And there's this strategy called the undercut or the overcut.
Okay.
Now, the difference between the two is when you do your pit stop, because there's no more fuel pit stops, there's only tire pit stops. So when you do your pit stop, dictates whether you're doing the undercut or the overcut. Now, if you think that you're in traffic and you can use your pit stop to get out of that traffic and get into clear air and do some really quick laps on new tires, then that could be your strategy. Yesterday, however, what happened was Raikkonen was leading the race. Vettel was second, and everybody said that Ferrari was going to choose that Vettel pass Raikkonen at some point during the race. So Raikkonen decided to come into the pits first and change his tyres. In the meantime, what that did for Vettel was it gave him clear air, and Vettel decided to stay out a couple of laps
and
put in some blistering laps that that Raikkonen just couldn't match.
Now, is the driver making that decision, or is it the team bosses making that decision?
So whoever's leading the race in the team gets the choice over whether who pits first. So Raikkonen could choose not to pit, or he could choose to pit. So it was his choice.
Yeah.
And he chose to pit. And Vettel didn't, and stayed out on the track and did the fastest laps of the race at that point in time.
Yeah.
And when he did eventually come in, he had made up so much time that he had overtaken Raikkonen. And Raikkonen was sad, and it doesn't have a very good personality anyway.
No, well, I mean, when I've seen a spoiled brat sulk, I mean, he really was sulking.
Well, let's not talk about Hamilton and sulking, but...
Yeah. Did he sulk yesterday as well?
You know what
he was... Did you see his position?
He was number 13. He started 13th.
Well, he landed up 7th.
Yeah.
He did a really good job, but a lot to do with the crashes that had happened that got him to the position that he was in. But he was complaining about his car. And while I think the setup was not ideal, look at where Bottas came.
Mm.
He came 4th.
Yeah.
So Hamilton could have done a better job. I just don't like the way Hamilton complains, but he's a really good driver.
I was looking at the same thing because, I mean, a lot of times when you go to the tracks with the bikes now, for example, certain tracks suit certain manufacturers just better. So I also thought maybe it's just a Ferrari track. But then, like you say...
It is a Ferrari track. And the reason is the Ferraris this year have a lot more cornering ability and a lot more grunt. Whereas the Mercedes, you'll see on the tracks with longer straights, have a lot more pace. On those longer straights, and it's been proven now over the last couple of races that on the bigger tracks with less corners, the Mercedes is gonna do better.
Yeah, geez. Well, I mean, it really, really is exciting and nice to see. I think.
Well, there's six drivers up for up for the challenge, and that's the nice thing about this year's Ferrari. Mercedes and Red Bull are all strong
in the running. Well, fantastic, George. I think we'll obviously keep our listeners up to date on what's happening. We can't talk too much about MotoGP, but Valentino Rossi for falling on that last lap. We're not even going to talk about it. And before we get into our bike review, which you've been driving, and I'm assuming you're still on today,
yes.
I just want to do a quick news. In 1 minute, and it won't even be that long. But what was really, really cool is to see the transport departments have pushed for 24-hour traffic law enforcement. So they want to now have cops on the road 24/7. Most of our accidents happen between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. in the morning, but looks like we're pushing to have our roads monitored 24 hours a day, which is really fantastic. Fuel prices over the last 10 years have like a roller coaster kind of ride. They're up at the moment. VW are bringing out a GTR variant on the app, and that will be here next year. Nicky Hayden passing away, our respect to his family and to the fans, and the crazy thing is, these Oaks are on massive pieces of machinery and they're flying around tracks and he gets onto a bike and gets hit by someone in a car. And then I see Ford have just changed their CEO, so Jim Hackett is replacing Mark Fields, which is really, really interesting move. That's my news.
Oh, so my turn.
Well, Marie, yes. What are you reviewing? Tell us about that piece of machinery that you're riding.
All right, so
very quickly, yeah.
Okay, so I've got the Bonneville Triumph, what's it called? Street Cup.
Yes.
Okay, so in short, it's basically, it's contemporary and it's a cafe racer look. It's called, they're trying to claim that it's got some street racer type of stuff to it, but I can't see that bit. Not in the engine power, not in anything.
Yeah.
So for me, it's a budget-wise cafe racer.
And
call it that.
Easy to ride?
Easy to ride, light, low, easy to turn. It's an entry-level rider bike for me in terms of experience, but also price-wise.
Okay.
I mean, it's selling for about $134,500 in our country now, and Triumph is giving them an additional $10,000 benefits, or whether you want accessories or whatever, which is important because people buy cheap helmets.
Yes, exactly. Or spend money on a good helmet. Yes. Like, don't be
looks
silly.
Looks like an old... If you remember, the old G6 R1000s.
Which one have you got? I think that's the wrong. Is that the 900cc Street Cup.
Okay.
Try that one. That's Bonneville, right. Yeah. So engine-wise, it does have torque. It doesn't have enough. Some of the styling they've gone with, the Triumph Thruxton R that won the Bike of the Year last year. So some of the styling is there. One thing I'm very upset about, probably my fault because I had pants on again with holes in it, I burnt my leg.
Oh,
on the exhaust. That's worse.
No, not the exhaust. The actual...
Oh, on the engine.
A part of the engine.
Oh, my gosh.
I thought, when last did that actually happen?
No, I remember you doing a review last year where the bike was getting very hot in, you know,
yes, no,
in
but
the
that
frame.
Was the Ducati.
The
yeah.
Ducati, yes.
Yes, it was really giving off a lot of heat. This one also, lovely in winter, I must say.
Yeah.
Not so nice in summer.
Not so nice in summer.
But, I mean, I have to say, I probably should have worn the right gear.
Okay.
You know, maybe it wouldn't have happened. But overall, the whole cafe racer style riding is busy growing in our country. It's not
I think that's
yet.
Great. Yes, but it's getting there.
But it's getting there.
Yeah. It's kind
and
of a version
a nice
of the custom Harley
yes.
Sort of person.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, they're the yellow and silver.
That one.
Yes.
Really
I mean,
nice
it's
looking
a beautiful
bike.
Looking
beautiful.
Bike. But it's not for advanced riders.
And tell me, is it out? You can go and you can buy it in the dealership floor so guys can go and check them out.
It's you know, if you're a rider that's new to this and you want to look the part, this is the bike.
Fantastic.
I see it's air-cooled.
Yes. And it's got ABS. It's got all the necessities, you know, electronically wise, safety wise. It's got everything you need. But it's not fancy suspension or anything like that.
Mm.
There you go for the Thruxton R.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, listen, my opinion still stands. I think more people should be on bikes. And
yes.
And download the Crash Detect even if you're on a bike.
Yes, exactly, because it still can help. So even if you're on a bike, if you stick it in your pocket,
it
will pick up the same things. Jacques, thanks so much for being in studio. I really appreciate you being here. George, thank you very much. Vilmarie and everyone else in our little box over here. Fantastic. We hope you have a great week, and we'll catch you guys in 2 weeks. CliffCentral.com.